The views expressed in this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of the station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Peddlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. This is episode 403 to be broadcast Wednesday, July 10th, 2024 on WHUS 91.7 FM and WHUS.org. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch, who's not here at this very moment, but she'll step back in a moment. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment and we should be able to respond. Bicycle Talk is a show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news and cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you have a comment or you'd like to contribute information to the show and you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment right down here below. Or if you're listening to this on audio file, you can very simply send me an email at bicycletalk@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on WHUS.org, iTunes, Spotify, or now on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. Ron's rant of the week. All right, here it is. My legs hurt, feeling old and not happy with it. More to come. I'm going to talk about that a little bit more in the show. I rode my bicycle up to the community center this morning to teach my class, and of course, you know, my legs hurt. And it's because I've been recovering from what I'm going to call a pharmaceutical-induced injury, which now I seem to have taken care of as far as stopping with the pharmaceutical. It took over 3 months to get there, but I'm starting to get there. But now I've run into the problem where my legs are so atrophied that I have to start all over again. So we're going to talk about this a little bit, and I'm going to bring up some points that are made by people who are familiar with this and are professionals, and you know, we'll talk a little bit more about it. Here's my second rant, though. Here we go. Here's a second rant. For those of us who like to breathe, okay, this is very important, especially if you like to breathe and you live in the lovely state of Connecticut. And I'll explain that in just a moment. Supreme Court blocks an EPA ban to curb ozone air pollution. Environmental advocates say that the court's decision in Ohio versus the EPA shows it's no longer neutral in cases involving environmental regulations. Well, why do I bring up Ohio? So I bring up Ohio and the Supreme Court, first of all, because that Supreme Court is not my Supreme Court. It's somebody else's Supreme Court. Not real happy about that. Making decisions like this affect the lives of people that live in, guess where? Connecticut, of all places. Yeah, we're pretty lucky out here in the northeastern corner because our air is pretty good, but the fallout from the big power plants that are out in Ohio, it generally tends to settle right here. And so it makes our air quality super bad, and it also makes it so we have very, very high restrictions on EPA restrictions as far as our vehicles go, etc. And it's not necessarily because of something that we're creating, it's because of something that's coming from other places. Primarily West Virginia and Ohio. It's just the way that the prevailing westerlies work and the way that things fall, and it's kind of a sad story. This is a real issue, and I am going to talk about it maybe a little bit more in the show as we get there, but not my Supreme Court, not very supreme to me. Anyway, on a positive side, the Tour de France. Anyone watching the Tour? Yeah, the Tour is just crazy good this year. There's been multiple jersey changes as far as the yellow jersey goes. There's been historical time trials. There's been just crazy stuff. Gravel roads in the Tour de France. Unbelievable. It has just been an amazing, amazing tour. And history is being made almost daily in the Tour. I talked about it a little bit last week. I talked about Vinayam Girmay. He did it again, stage 8. Wow, history's made again. We'll talk a little bit more about that. I'm just so impressed with this kid. He's He's humble, not normally a trait that you see within a sprinter. He's very thankful to his family, and his mother was the first thing that he mentioned. He'd like to thank his mother. This kid's great. And he's from Africa, and he's from a very tiny country in Africa, and he is making history. He won stage 8. It's out of the blue. Here we go again. This guy just, he's a good read. It was a great finish for him because it was an uphill finish before the sprint. And it worked well for him and what he was doing. He beat some amazingly talented riders that normally would have put an awful lot of pressure on him. And he won again. So he's got 2 wins now in the Tour de France. And he is now comfortably wearing the green jersey. So he's got like over 100 points over the next rider. And it's impressive, or almost 100 points. It's very, very close. So it's just great. It's just great. Half mile till the end of the race, and things got crazy, and he was just right place, right time, good lead outs, everything's good. I love this kid. He's very humble. He's not a typical hot-headed sprinter like we're normally used to seeing. So, not that I'm pointing any fingers in any particular directions, but let me mention one other thing. Mark Cavendish, he won his 34th, 35th stage, a race in the Tour. He now broke the record. He has the most Tour wins of any Tour de France rider ever in the history of the Tour. That's another thing that's happening. Everything's happening in the Tour this year. It's just been great. But we're going to move on to something local here, because I love to talk about this, and I meant to talk about it last week and forgot to bring it up. But this last 4th of July was the 39th annual Boombox Parade in beautiful downtown Willimantic, Connecticut. And this is a really cool event where you get to go out and you can march in a parade, which is basically the music is the background is played by the local radio station, which is why it's called the Boombox Parade, because people bring, used to be years ago, a lot of people had boom boxes, if you remember what those were. Anyway, they had loud systems that they could play the marching music to, and everybody just go out, and it's a free-for-all, you know, anybody can come and participate in the parade. So every year since the very first one, I've not missed many of these, but starting with the first one, I rode my bicycle pulling a refrigerator dolly with my ex-wife on it and my dog, and we went down the street as a parade of sorts, and I used a mountain bike to do it. So I've been bicycle themed for many, many years, including one year when my son and I did it with a trailer bike attached onto my bike, and I had constructed out of cardboard bicycle boxes. Yeah, because I had a lot of those, you know. I constructed a Stegosaurus dinosaur with an actual opening and closing mouth even. And Greg was operating that in the back by pulling cables. And we went down the street and with our heads poked out so people knew who we were. But anyway, it depends on what level of creativity and time I have as to what I put together for the Boombox Parade. But the last couple of years, I've done a caravan of bicycle trailers, pulling trailers with information signs on them. Just basic stuff like, you know, the fact that share the road, you know, very, very simple things as far as messages go, to messages like, you know, wait until you get around that cyclist, because, you know, you'll wait 4.5 minutes in a McDonald's drive-thru, yet you won't wait 30 seconds to get around me. Yeah, little things like that. And to remind people that very, very important people in the world ride bicycles. It may be their doctor, their lawyer, their They're, you know, I mean, go down the list here. It may be a fireman. It may be a person on a bicycle. I saw two police officers on bicycles at the Boombox Parade. People ride bikes. And that was another one of my big messages. People ride bikes. So anyway, I put these messages all over a couple of trailers, which I pull in tandem behind my bike. And I, you know, can't do my own personal advocacy campaign down the road. So it's all good. It's all good fun. And of course, promoting Bicycle Talk too, with a big sign that says Bicycle Talk on it. So anyway, that's the Boombox Parade. I love the Boombox Parade. It's just a lot of fun. It's a great chance to get out and say what you need to say. Hopefully next year we're working on another bicycle-oriented theme. I'm trying to put it together with the Grand Master of the Parade, Wayne Norman, who has a local radio station here in Willimantic. I have a bigger and better idea for next year, bicycle oriented. So we shall see what happens next year. But that will be the 40th annual Boombox Parade. So it'll be a cool thing. Mechanical Minute and Ron's tips for the week. Well, I got a couple things here. First of all, the flat tires on Stage 9 gravel. Boy, there were a lot of flat tires. They were all riding. It appeared that most of the riders were riding on 32C tires, which were pretty good for gravel roads, but maybe something a little wider would have worked a little bit better. I'm not sure what the UCI ruling was on that as far as how wide they could go. But there were numerous flat tires on this Stage 9 of the Tour de France. And of course, Stage 9 of the Tour de France had 14 gravel sections on it. So all very, very interesting. It was a loop ride from a particular small town in France, and it went through a lot of the wine country. So it was beautiful. But there was a lot of dirt, and the dirt segments tended to be narrower roads and approaches into them that bottlenecked at the very beginning. It was a wild race. It was really rather interesting. I know there were a lot of riders that were complaining about it at the very beginning because, you know, why are we putting this into the Tour de France? But at the end of the day, it seemed like most people they liked it. They thought it was kind of cool. So anyway, flat tires on gravel. So I don't know what to say. I mean, you could run tubeless tires. You know how I feel about those things. That's a possibility that might help with your flat tires. People have tried it on cyclocross bikes. It doesn't work so good. Usually tubulars are better. I think probably most of the riders were probably riding on a tubular tire, I would guess, or maybe they're riding on a more impact oriented, clincher. But the fact that there were so many flats, it just kind of amazes me. I don't know what the reasoning was. You'd probably, since it's going to be primarily tarred roads with some dirt sections on it, I would think that you'd still want to maintain a fair amount of air pressure in the tire. But who knows? It's all about the air pressure. It's all about the body weight. It's all about what works for you, and it will not maybe work for your neighbor. So you have to kind of look at it that way. but anyway, as far as other tips for the week, how do I get stronger legs for my cycling? My legs hurt and are weak. Yeah. So I got this weak leg problem here because my muscles have definitely atrophied from the problem that I was having with the pharmaceutical that I was taking. And the pharmaceutical I was taking, I've talked about this on previous shows, is a cholesterol-reducing medication that my cardiologist wants me to be on. And I'm not so certain I'm in love with this whole idea of reducing my cholesterol, but I would rather increase my fitness and try to control it more naturally. And that right now is the direction that we're headed. But in the meantime, it took about 3 months to get this stuff out of my body enough so that I could actually work out hard again. And now when I hit a hill, it's like I'm starting to feel like all my friends did when I was riding years ago, and they'd say, God, you can climb, but I just cannot stay with you on the hills. And it's like, now I can't stay with anyone on the hills because my legs are just, they're done. They're blown. They've got no power in them whatsoever. So I am back to square one and trying to figure out what to do about that. And I've got a few things here that we can talk about here. And this one comes from Bike Radar, and how to get stronger legs from cycling. 13 leg workouts for cyclists. So leg workouts may be the direction to go here. You can do them at home. You can do them in your local gym. But a lot of them tend to be focused a lot on squats. Squats seem to be the thing, if your knees can handle it. Now, knees are tough because, you know, as we get older, our knees sometimes aren't as strong as they used to be. And you got to be careful not to do any damage to your knees or hurt them in any way. So doing squats is about as beneficial for cyclists because it helps keep your hamstrings balanced by working them in different ways than your pedaling action does. As a cyclist, you should aim to squat down fairly low so that your thighs are roughly parallel to the ground, and angle your legs will be used through pedaling. To understand the squat, begin by standing on your feet slightly more than shoulder width apart. Slowly breathe in while dropping your weight backwards and down as if you're going to take a seat. This is the most important part. You want to make sure you put your butt back behind you. And I always emphasize a good yoga pose here. So you really want that arched back and that forward gaze when you're doing it. And you just, you drop down, you do the long deep breaths, and then slowly bring yourself back up. So squats are super helpful for doing this sort of thing. There's another thing that is helpful too, which let me talk about that right now. And it's sitting against a wall, basically, is what it is. And you put your back up against a wall and slowly lower yourself down to a seated position so that your top of your thighs, your quads, are running parallel to the floor. And you hold yourself there for whatever time you've decided to do that with. And it's hard. It's really, really hard, but it will build back your muscular strength and your quads, which is super helpful. And then you need to do other things too. But anyway, leg squats are huge. There's different ways of doing them. There's another one called a Bulgarian split squat, which that triggers more of your glutes, your quads, and your hamstring, which is fantastic for lower body strength and flexibility. But you will require a step, a bench, or that is ideally 15 to 30 centimeters off the floor. And a chair will work for that sort of thing. And you put one foot up on the chair and then you squat forward with the other one. Always being super careful here to keep your knees behind your toes when you're on your squatted leg too. That's like a super helpful thing. And then you drop down. You can do these on a bench at the gym, or you can do these with a chair at home. So you do these 10 to 20 times for 30 to 60 seconds on each leg. It's very hard. That would be more advanced, I would think, but you'll get there. Another one, and this one, if you do any kind of yoga, you could do a yoga squat, which is simply, you know, putting you're standing at legs that are shoulder width apart again. You're dropping down with your knees going out to the sides, and that seems to work fairly good too. And you just slowly go up and down, and it's very, very difficult. Once again, don't do too many of these at once. They say here, do 2 to 3 sets, 10 to 20 reps. I go slow at first. I'm going to go real slow at first when I do this. There's also plyometrics, which I'm just not going to get involved with right now. Fran talked about it earlier on her show, and the plyometrics can be really hard on your knees, so I'm not a big fan of plyometrics as I've gotten older. But you know, I think you have to be careful about that. And I did look something up while we had her show on about, you know, doing plyometrics without jumping. So there are other ways to put that explosive drill into your legs to help. But other things, Romanian deadlifts, which is basically a single leg squat. Those are very, very difficult too. But it does target your hips, your glutes, and your hamstrings. And it makes a big difference there. And the thing that I think we all forget about a lot when we're riding our bikes is we forget about our glutes. Or as our friend Amanda says, the wattage cottage. Yes, sirree, your butt. Yeah, your butt is a very, very essential part of cycling, and it really, really makes a big difference. So that is something that there are different things that you can do, but you can do lunges, which will help a lot with that. That will target both your glutes and also your hamstrings. And again, when you do your lunge, you always step back on the lunge. You don't step forward, and you keep that knee behind the toes if you can, that front knee behind the toes. So lunges work really good. You can do them with weights if you want to do that. There's a lot of different ways of doing it. Jumping lunges, don't recommend it because, once again, it's that jumping thing. I'm not real big on the jumping thing. You can do other things. I don't want you to hurt your knees to the point where you can't ride your bike. That's like really, really a bad thing. One of my favorites, though, and this was number 9 on their list here, is one-legged pedaling. The one-legged drill. If you can find now you could do this indoors on a trainer, but it's not nearly as effective as it is if you do it outdoors on a 2-3% grade, because you take one leg out and make the other leg go through the entire pedal stroke. You're not just pushing down on the pedals, you're pushing forward, you're pushing down, you're pulling through the bottom and pulling up, because it's the only way you can maintain and sustain the speed of any kind to keep the bike going forward. I'm a big believer in one-legged drills. I think they work really good. I'll be heading out to do those sometime very soon. And we have a perfect situation here because we have a rail trail, which is very, very close to home, and it does have a 2% grade on it. So there's no way that you can stop pedaling on it, because you'll stop going forward if you do. So what I usually do on these is I'll do about 20 reps at a time and on each leg, and then switch back and forth and back and forth. You can do them by either taking one foot off of the other pedal, or you can do it if you use your mind and focus correctly. You can just do it with your both your feet on the pedals. Just tell the other leg to shut off and not do anything. So that does require a little bit more talent, a little more skill. So you might find when you start out that your movements are going to be a little bit jerky on the upstroke due to your weak hip flexors. Yeah, hip flexors can get this is a great way to strengthen your hip flexors and get your pedal motion really smooth. It also sort of teaches your brain and your body that this is the way you're supposed to be pedaling. You're supposed to be using 360 degrees of power as you go all the way around on your bike. So I think that one leg drills are just a great thing. Simple things like calf raises. You just, you know, you're standing there with your feet on the flat and the floor, and you just lift up on your toes and come back down. You can do these either on a flat surface, or you can do them on the edge of stairs, and it'll help get your calves strong too. There's a glute bridge, which is a yoga style of pose where you will lay down flat on the floor with your feet flat on the floor, and then you'll slowly raise your body up off the floor so you're just on your shoulder blades and your feet, and hold yourself up there, and it engages your core a lot. Makes a big difference there. It also helps stretch your quads a little bit too, which is helpful. So I think that's also a nice thing you can do. You can do those either with two legs, or you can do a single leg glute bridge, which is definitely more difficult, and it will use more of your hamstrings and more of your back. So be careful when you're doing those. But those are things that will help you. And then, of course, the last one is deadlifts. And I was talking to someone at the gym this morning who is a, John is a retired phys ed teacher from I think he was at a high school. I can't remember exactly where. But he talks a lot about doing deadlifts, and you use either a kettlebell or you use a single weight that you just hold in front of you and keep yourself centered, and then do the lifts up and down, and it'll strengthen your lower back, it'll strengthen your hamstrings, and it'll inspire you to understand what your glutes are all about, because it's really hard on the glutes. You really feel them. And once again, I think that's an underrated and under appreciated part of your body when you ride your bike. When your glutes get stronger, your cycling gets a lot better. So I'm going to go through all of these things, because strong legs for cycling is a big deal. It makes a big, big difference. And yeah, you also need to have cardio too. There's no question about that. But I've got the cardio. The cardio is pretty good right now. I've been doing a lot of long, slow distance training, which means that I've been riding at 70% of my max or less. And that was because I was kind of forced into it because of the injury that I had. And now I've got a great base. So now it's time to go to work. Yeah. And, you know, work's going to hurt. And I'll get there, and I'm hoping to report more on this as we go into more episodes of Bicycle Talk in the future. So we will get there. We will definitely get there. And we're going to make that go away and go back here. So this brings me to, as I started looking more and more towards other ways to get information, I went to Chris Carmichael's page. So Chris Carmichael obviously has a lot of history with training. He was a very famous trainer for Lance Armstrong back in the day. He also raced bicycles with Lance over the years, and he's got good information and good tips. And he, of course, would love to get you into into his system, which would be very, very nice. But he gives away a lot of free information too, which, or at least instructs you in a direction which will help you here. So shout out to Chris Carmichael for what he is sharing with us, because he is the founder of the Carmichael Training Systems, or as he now calls it, CTS. And he's the founder and chief endurance officer. I like that. That's good. So Chris is now in his 60s, and he's had a hip replacement and a knee replacement. So, you know, we get a little older, we get a little harder on our bodies. Maybe we were really hard on our bodies when we were younger, and now we have to start looking at things like injuries that we created from a bad experience, or maybe it was a crash, maybe it was some other accident, maybe we ran too much, maybe we rode our bikes too hard. They're the things that can happen. But anyway, he talks in this particular article, he talks about baby boomers and elder Gen X athletes. That is between 50 and 70 years of age, which I fall into that category. Almost fall out of that category, believe it or not. But anyway, I guess age happens. But anyway, the specific myths below all stem from a primary misconception of getting older means growing frail, that the body inevitably wears out and breaks down, that we're fragile and should only do easy to moderate activities so we don't overexert ourselves, get hurt, or accelerate the degenerative effects of wear and tear. We are not frail nor fragile. There are consequences of growing older that affect athletic performance for sure, but senior athletes, particularly those with years of experience behind them, can do more than most people expect. Okay, so He's got four myths here. The following myths about exercise and aging are holding you back. It's time to change your viewpoint and get back to a high performance mindset. I loved reading this because this is, I teach seniors classes now too, as well as the indoor cycling classes. And I'm dealing with a lot of people that are older, and I would say many of them are not at the level that I am at or that Fran is at, and they are they've been sitting around for a long time and now they're looking at the consequences of what they've done to themselves over the years or not done for themselves over the years. So I deal with a lot of that, but at the same time I do have some people that have stayed active their entire lives too. So I get all types. I get all different types in my classes, and I find it very interesting and interesting to hear about them, about their lifestyles, and about, you know, things like chronic arthritis and things like that that happen as they get older, and how the exercise is totally changing their lives. So it's never too late, is what I'm trying to say. But anyway, myth number one, all performance markers get worse after 50. So Chris Carmichael calls this a myth. He says it's a matter of perspective and your starting point. Your maximum aerobic capacity will incrementally diminish, and you will gradually lose muscle mass. Stroke volume, the volumes of blood pump per heartbeat decrease compared to a sedentary person. These declines happen more slowly for athletes. Use it or lose it. I say that all the time. Use it or lose it are not the only options. The body does not stop adapting to training load as you get older. Stress the physiological system and it will still adapt and grow stronger. Older athletes can often improve VO2 max because they still have room to improve. You can gain muscle with focused training and sufficient nutritional support, enough calories, more protein. But the biggest place you can improve your power at lactic threshold as a percentage of your VO2 max declines 1-2% per year year over year. And you may be able to improve your maximum sustainability and power by 5-8%, unless you're already fast as you could possibly be. You have room to improve. That's being limited by the small declines in maximum performance capacity. So that's a myth. That's a myth. All performance markers get worse after 50. Not true. Not true at all. So this is a guy who trains a lot of people. So he has a lot of background on this. Myth number two, older athletes can't sprint. I never could sprint to begin with. I was not the sprinting type. And I would suffer when it would come down to a finish line in a bike race because this little skinny boy don't sprint. I didn't have it in me to do it. And there were guys that were way more talented than I was, and they were able to put out a whole lot more wattage than I was. But it's just a matter of my body type, and I was much better at the long endurance rides, and I was much better at the big hills because I didn't have as much volume of body to carry up the hills. So, you know, it was definitely not to my advantage. But he says that he sees a loss of training specifically, or perhaps more accurately, an increase in training specifically for endurance. So as we tend to get older and tend to want to do longer rides, we tend to lose our ability to sprint and jump and go fast. And that is not uncommon. I do see that. So older athletes can sprint, but they have to stay focused on it. That's the whole point. Myth number three, older athletes can't handle high training loads. Well, you know, he says the amount of stress a person can tolerate is based on many factors. And this myth is more about ramping up training stress too quickly and is about the training workload an athlete can handle. As coaches, he often sees a senior athlete who has to step away from or dramatically diminish training by a significant portion of the year, 2+ months. Their fitness drops, but they will try to jump back in training right where they left off. And it's too much too soon. It's what I have called, and Fran has heard this one many times, the two disease. Too much, too fast, too soon, too hard.
Too far.
Too far. Yeah. The two disease. It's definitely a problem. So you can handle this as you get older. You just can't overdo it. You have to take very specific incremental baby steps towards where you're going to go. So you can handle a lot of workload if you do that, but you have to be smart about it. That's exactly what he says here. Pay close attention to your recovery, but don't limit your goals because you think you're too old for the workout. Now, myth number 4, older athletes can't recover between back-to-back days. So he says that senior athletes tell him all the time that they don't recover as fast as they used to. They used to be able to do a big ride and feel better after one day of rest, and now it takes 2 days or more. And he says he feels it too. And it's true that hard workouts can take more out of us senior athletes, bigger recovery hole to fill, and that our abilities to repair tissues and adapt stress are slower than before. So how do senior athletes survive and thrive during multi-day cycling tours and, as he says, CTS camps and bucket list events? So he's has some very intense training camps that he does. As with many other areas in our lives, senior athletes have to work smarter instead of harder. Simple. That's it. Chances are your recovery habits during your younger years had a lot of room for improvement. You could have recovered better and adapted more, but that's what you need to know to do now. Sleep, nutrition, and hydration are the pillars of recovery. When his athletes he says, do 500 plus miles in 6 days, the focus is just eat, sleep, ride, repeat. Even your everyday life, do the work to enhance your recovery habits around sleeping, eating, and staying hydrated. Sleeping, eating, staying hydrated. Those are key. So there it is. That's from the master of all masters, Chris Carmichael. He definitely knows his stuff. And just because you're 50 years of age or older does not mean that you're on your way down a big slide here. You can continue to stay with it. You continue to stay active. How many people do I know that are in their 60s and now 70s that are still out there functionally riding their bikes and riding their bikes well? It's not uncommon that I see that. It becomes even more common, actually, because increase of injured runners seems to be also the increase of more cyclists, because runners have been running their whole lives. They do a lot of damage to their bodies because of the impact, and then they need to get back on their bikes again, or they need to keep working out because they have that training regimen in their brain, and they want to continue to do it, and they have the cardiovascular background to do it, but pounding on the road is just too much for them. So they take to a bicycle. And we see that's why we have a standard statement here. What do you call old runners? Fran?
Cyclists.
There it is in the background. Yes, very good. So anyway, this is definitely a problem that occurs. I'm going to move on now because we've just got so much good stuff going on the Tour de France that I have to talk about. And one of my new favorite riders of all time has become is Biniam Girmay. Biniam Girmay is, like, I talked about him last week. I ran a little profile on him, where he was from. He's from a very small country in the far eastern corner of Africa, northeastern corner of Africa, actually. And he's just become a phenomenon on his bike. He's 24 years old. He's the first African to win a stage tour in the Tour de France. He also was the first African to win a stage tour in the Giro d'Italia. And he is listed as a sprinter, but he's got a lot of other raw strength too. And the second stage that he won on the tour, by the way, he's the only rider in this year's Tour de France who has won two stages at this time. So that's kind of cool because he's got a record going there. The second thing he's got going is he's the first African American. He's not American. He's African. He's the first African to win a stage in the tour. Now he's won two stages in the tour. Now he's also kept himself up in the points jersey too. So he's got the green jersey by a long shot right now. And there's a very good chance that he could finish this Tour de France, as long as he finishes, because there are so many factors. But as long as he finishes, he could end up finishing wearing the green jersey. That's phenomenal. That's just phenomenal to me. And so I love watching him. He's still young. He's 24 years old. When they interview him after his races, he's not all about himself. He's not very self-centered at all. He's very grateful and very thankful to a lot of people that have gotten him to where he is today. And it's just really, really refreshing to hear. I like this guy a lot. He rides with a team called the Intermarche Wanty, which they're a low-level team. They're in the Tour de France, but they never expected to be doing what they're doing right now. And they've got this superstar sprinter who's just doing a great job and in a really nice way. He continues to make history. And the stage eight was a sprinter's race. It was relatively flat. And oh my God, a friend of mine shared some information from Tadej Pogačar's Strava that Tadej rode. That stage was basically, it was 100 miles long is what it was, not kilometers, but it's 100 miles long. And Tadej just sat in all day because it was super flat, and they weren't going super fast that day. The whole peloton wasn't going super fast that day, but they were still in excess of 25 or 28 miles an hour. They were moving. And Pogačar burned 1,200 calories in 100 miles. How do you do that? How do you do that? That's what I want to know. So let's go back to Vinium, because I just think this guy is... This stage was suited to him. He has an ability to climb, which a lot of sprinters don't. So that's definitely an issue there. Most sprinters are not great, great climbers, but Vinium is. And so it was to his advantage that there was this very sharp uprise at the very end of the race. And he got an advantage there. He stayed in great placement on the race. He had top-notch sprinters and lead out trains in front of him, and he did it. He did the whole thing. He just walked away with it at the very end, and for the last half mile of that race. So that was pretty cool. That was totally a cool thing. So I like this guy. I like this guy a lot. He's definitely, he's got some cool stuff going on. He just has shown us that there's some humility to being a sprinter. You don't have to be, you know, in your face. I'm not going to point any fingers at Mark Cavendish. He's been doing it for 20 years, and that's why he has so many wins. But when he was young, he was not a pleasant guy. He was definitely kind of in your face and kind of, you know, macho sprinter type guy. I don't have a lot of patience for those guys. But, you know, give him credit. He is now the number one. He is the number one stage winner in the Tour de France. Now, he's been at it for 20 years. And people go, well, you know, he beat Eddy Merckx. Well, Eddy Merckx wasn't at it for 20 years. That's another thing to understand. Eddie did it in, I think, 8 years or less. I think it was 8 years or less that Eddie got all of his wins. So there's a big difference there. And there's also different types of stages that Eddie was winning versus what Mark was winning. So anyway, There's lots of stories in the tour this year. It's really, really fun. It's just been a great race. And there's more to come. And of course, they're on a rest day today. So, whew, boy, I was getting tired watching. So, yeah, they're definitely on a rest day today. But it's they've staged, they're going to go to stage 10. Stage 10 will be another very, very flat. It you can't say a lot about it. It's a very little to talk about. Intermediate sprint after 57 kilometers, a tiny ascent that finishes with 7 kilometers to go, and it's just going to be a big bunch sprint. So it's just very straight, flat, and fast. That's what it is. So that'll be stage 10. And then, of course, we'll move on to the next stages. I think Wednesday is the first day where things get ugly again. And not that you know anything here is like overly ugly, but it's Let's see here. Stage. So that will be stage 10. Stage 11 is another. Well, no, I take that back. Stage 11 looks like. So that'll be Wednesday. Yeah, that's correct. That's 211 kilometers, and we're heading south towards the Pyrenees. The beginning of a 211-kilometer stage is flat, but the finality is rather hilly with 4 categorized climbs. The GC riders might have an interesting battle there. So, and there might also be a breakaway contest for it, too. We'll see what happens. So, yeah, coming soon, more hills. And then stage 12, once again, they're going to come out of the hills, and it'll probably be another sprinting stage, 204 kilometers, but it's primarily downhill. And then stage 13, which will bring us let's see, what do we have here? This is another day for sprinters. It's rolly, but it's primarily going to be a sprinter stage again. And then stage 14, things get real because we have the Col du Tourmalet. Yeah, the Tourmalet. It's a big one. It's a huge mountain. It's 152 kilometer stage, but there's, you know, big time climbs on it. And the final climb is a mountaintop finish, and it's 10 kilometers long at 8%. So that's not going to feel good. I went up 8% this morning. I went up 10% this morning. It hurts. It's hard. So, and then that'll bring us into next week. So next Monday and next rest day. So yeah, more good, exciting stuff happening with the tour. It's just great. There's just tons of interesting things going on. We're dealing with people that are, well, let's go, I'm going to go back to Van Gogh, because he's Jonas Van Gogh, and had a horrible crash. Also, Remco Evenepoel and Primoz Roglic, all three of the 4 Tour de France main contenders, crashed at high speed. And but it was Van Gogh that suffered massive injuries that had him fear for his life in the first. And in the first rest day of the Tour de France, which was today, he had a public interview and he talked about it. And he said, "It was so bad, I thought I was going to die. And if I did survive, I thought to myself, stop cycling." He said at a press conference this Monday morning, "The Dane crashed at speed and hit rocks on the side of the road. Whilst he managed to avoid a concrete gully where several other riders fell into, he was in no better condition. He stayed on the ground for several minutes motionless before having to be stabilized on an ambulance. And a total of 4 riders required serious attention. Fellow climbers Jay Vine and Steph Cross, being 2 of them, also with severe injuries. Van Gogh punctured a lung, suffered fractured ribs and a collarbone. He was a mess. And now he is racing in the Tour de France." And everything I'm hearing about him is, you know, they're saying, well, he's really not there. And, you know, he's not back yet. he just keeps saying, I'm getting stronger every day and I'm going to train my way into the finish of this and things are going to get better towards the end. And I don't doubt this kid at all. He's pretty amazing. And he doesn't have as big and strong a team as Tadej Pogačar has, but he is a really seriously good climber. And he also can time trial really well. But hold your horses, because Remco Evenepoel is in the mix and coming at you real strong. And he is the world time trialing specialist and is his first Tour de France. And he regained a whole bunch of time at the time trial. They had a short time trial. He came back. He's only 33 seconds down now. He's a fret. He's ahead of Jonas. And he is behind Tadej. So we got a race. We got a real race going on here. And Primoz Roglic is right behind all of them. So it's just, could be anybody's race. Anything can happen. It's the Tour de France. It's very interesting. It's, these guys are making it very, very entertaining. I'm a little bit worried about Primoz Roglic because he just lost his number one man. He is out of the race completely. And so Primoz is kind of on his own with a weaker team now. And maybe he should have stayed with Visma. But anyway, we won't get into that. That's a political thing. So I see just a lot of really good stuff going on. And it just should be really, really entertaining. And we're just 1 week in. And it's just like every day had something really, really interesting happen. So I'm psyched. I'm really, really psyched. Let's see, what else do I have here? The problem is, let's see. So what we have here is, I was looking for the overall results and I thought I had it on the screen here, but I seem to have put it somewhere else. Oh, okay. So this is the Primoz Roglic part here. He's not that far down, but his big man, Vlasov, was involved in a scary crash, and he went head over heels off the tarmac and into a ditch. And it looks like he's showing signs of possible concussion, and he didn't put him back on his bike. They took him out of the race because he was dazed and wasn't in really, really good shape. So that takes out a major Bora rider, which really is unfortunate. But anyway, he's going to leave the Tour de France. And then they also discovered after that, they discovered he had an ankle fracture too. So, oops. This bike racing thing is really crazy. It's really dangerous. If you are at all interested in it, or you have kids that are interested in doing this, I warn you ahead of time. This is a very, very dangerous sport, but it is so much fun. It is just so much fun. So I still encourage it. I still love it and will continue to love it, but it is dangerous. You do have to understand just how dangerous it can be. So anyway, we will see what happens. I have yet to see. We'll just have to wait. So maybe Bimian can get another stage win. That would be remarkable if he could pull off another one. He's already got such a great lead right now as far as the points jersey goes, which is really wonderful. It's going to be interesting. It's all going to be very, very interesting. So there's a couple of things that have been added on here too. I don't know if I have a whole lot of time for this. Actually, I don't. I'm going to wait for next week on this because we will have more information next week when it comes to that. I thought that the gravel stage of the tour was really interesting. There was a lot of controversy to it, but I think at the end, everybody was pretty happy with how it all worked out. And it was entertaining to say the least. Yeah, Tadej Pogačar attacked on the gravel roads towards the end. He is a monster on his bike right now. But nobody could really, he couldn't really get away from anyone this time. And they kept him in sight, and they kept him in well contained, I should say. So the GC riders are the same as they were before they got into the gravel road. But the gravel road, I would say the gravel sections, the 14 gravel sections that they put in, probably made it as entertaining as watching a mountain stage, but for a different reason, definitely for a different reason. One thing to understand, Jonas Vingegaard had a flat tire and rode the last 100 kilometers, the last half of the race, on a teammate's bike because they couldn't get the team car up to him soon enough to be able to take care of his bike. So his teammate just gave him his bike, and Tadej rode on a bike that didn't really fit him. Jonas rode on a bike that didn't really fit him, but he did it. He went the whole way, and he stayed true to Pogačar's wheel, and it's all part of the drama of the Tour de France. It's all good stuff. We're going to move on because that's it. That's all I got for now. We've got events, the 2024 Quiet Corner Bike Tour presented by Thread City Cyclers is coming up on Sunday, July 28th. We'll have more information about that as we get closer to that event. The Farm to Fork Fondo, the final Farm to Fork Fondo, will be at the Champlain Islands this weekend. I think Tyler still has some openings there. If you're interested, you can sign up for that. Go to farmtoforkfitness.com. You can check that out. I will be there. I will be announcing the event and doing other things, I guess. I've just got an email back, and I'm going up on Friday. So I'll be there through the weekend, which will be nice. I'm excited by that because it's just going to be a lot of fun. It's just a great, great group of people. I've worked for them with them over the last 10 years, and it's just been a great time. And if you're going to the Farm to Fork Fondo this weekend, and that's at the Champlain Islands in Vermont, I'll see you there. Stop by and give Pedal and Run a shout out. And I'd love to see you and meet you and say hi to you or meet you again, because I'm sure there will be people coming back. So the Steeplechase Bike Tour and Walk is Saturday, August 17th. There's a 20, a 35, and a 62-mile road ride, a 5-mile fundraising walk, and an 18-mile gravel ride, and a 40-mile gravel route is now available this year. Gravel's hot right now, guys. Rock. Project Mayhem Cyclocross Series coming this fall. Stay tuned. Lots of things going on there. Should be real exciting. It looks like we've got a really big series now. I think we are up to 8 different events in Project Mayhem, so of which Mansfield Hollow is one. We've got some changes going on there, but we're definitely in. So, finishing points. You watching the tour? Is this fun or what? What do you think? This is good stuff. I'm telling you, it's just really, really great stuff. I am just so thrilled with the Tour de France. Do you have an injury that maybe you were dealing with over the years, and now you're back, and you basically got your strength back and rehabbed yourself and all? I'd love to hear your story and have you share it with me. I'm going through that myself right now, and it would be interesting to hear your point of view and your perspective on it. But we are far from dead yet. Okay, we're going to get back, we're going to get strong, and we're going to go for it. So 2024, what's your schedule here? More miles, ride and commute to work or around town, better fitness, simply enjoying the bicycle rides you take by just slowing down and, smelling the roses. I'll say it again, it won't be my last time. You got to get loud, active. Our time has come. Stop complaining about traffic and dangerous roads and price of gas and lack of places to safely ride your bike and join the revolution of change. Ride your bike. If you're going to go to work and or do errands around town, ride your bike instead. You might just surprise yourself. The views expressed on this story, on this program, do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. You've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, Fran Storch, who's in the background here. If you're watching on Facebook Live, please feel free to comment, or you can send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes on whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, or on my Bicycle Talk YouTube channel. This is Pedal and Ron. Remember, keep your rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM, WHUS Stores, and WHUS.org. Thanks for listening. Get on your bikes and ride!